Good morning and welcome to the April 18th edition of the Senate Committee on Revenue. Today we have two bills to hear. Work sessions are proposed on Senate Bill 764, extending the Pollution Control Facilities Tax Credit, and Senate Bill 229, which authorizes the creation of or designation of enterprise zones in e-commerce area. So today we're going to start with Senate Bill 764, and Ed, I understand that there's some amendments that are scheduled to be brought forward that are not ready for the committee's consideration today. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's my information. The sponsors of the bill haven't reached the point where they're ready to submit their amendments for your consideration yet.
Okay. There are, however, some folks that would like to add some testimony to the record on 764, and since we have possibly a little spare time this morning, we'll go ahead and invite their testimony now. So that we're in work session, this would be invited testimony only. If you'll make your presence known, you'll be invited to testify. Come forward, please.
Not been invited.
Invited testimony, I'll ask you to limit it to 10 minutes or less if you can.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sarah Dahl and I'm with the Oregon Environmental Council, and I have Matt Blevins up here with me today. We are here today to make it clear for the record that the Oregon Environmental Council opposes Senate Bill 764. From our perspective, while it may have made sense years ago when it was put in place, at this time it no longer makes sense. It costs too much. Given that the state faces a huge deficit, we don't see where it makes sense to spend these resources to help businesses comply with federal law. According to the Department of Environmental Quality, at this point 75% of the expenditures under this program actually go to help comply with existing law. We think that it encourages pollution control versus pollution prevention. We would much rather see the incentive go to the front end of the process versus the back end. It subsidizes legally required actions. Again, 75% of the expenditures are for current things that are currently required. Langmarsh, the former head of the Department of Environmental Quality, actually said the credit program actually results in little benefit to Oregon's environment beyond what is already required by law. And I would make the point that ordinary citizens don't get paid to comply with laws. You know, no one is out there offering to pay me to, you know, drive my car at 55 on down I-5. Raises the question of why should we be paying businesses to comply with the law. The majority of benefit goes to very few companies. 15 companies or their corporate predecessors received nearly two-thirds of all the pollution control tax credits granted in the 32 years of the program. Other states have phased out their programs. Oregon is one of the few states that still retains this kind of tax credit, and it is by far the most generous. What other states have done is, if they do retain it, has limited the amount that they've given, and it goes for voluntary compliance above and beyond. We would also argue that the pollution control tax credit is not the most effective economic development tool. I've heard a lot of discussion about jobs, and the pollution control tax credit projects would happen anyway because pollution control tax credit only applies to capital expenditures, not necessarily staff. So if you were a business that wanted to hire additional folks to do development of new processes, you wouldn't be able to get a tax credit to hire those folks. You would be able to get a tax credit, though, to pay for the pollution control facility or a scrubber, for example, for air quality. And we would argue that there are other investments that would create more jobs. There are other incentives, such as the State Investment Project or Enterprise Zones, which create more of an incentive for bringing jobs to different parts of the state. And again, to go back to the main point, does it really make sense at this point to subsidize businesses to comply with the law when the state is facing such a huge deficit? I would argue that we need to hold industry to a very high standard on this point, that we're not simply paying them to comply with the law. Do you have anything to add, Mr. Chair?
Senator Castillo.
Thank you. You made a statement about that ours is one of the largest tax credits by far compared to other states. Could you give an example of what do you mean, a comparison of what maybe some other states are offering for pollution control tax credits?
Well, for example, the state of Georgia offers a tax credit to companies between 3 and 8% of the cost of the pollution control equipment. Delaware gives facilities a $400 tax credit for each 10% reduction that the company has in their emissions. So, I mean, it's just simply not even in the same ballpark.
And compared to ours, which is?
Ours is 50% of the cost of the facility. And if you go down to actual numbers, for example, in 1998, we gave out $21 million, in 1998, it was $68 million, I believe. In other states, I believe Arizona still retains one of these, and I believe that the amount that they gave out in 1996 was closer to $700,000. Thank you.
I have a couple questions, and then I'll turn it over to the Vice Chairman. You mentioned in your testimony that citizens don't get tax incentives for pollution control issues, and I guess I would point out that citizens get a wide variety of tax incentives for all kinds of different purposes, including energy conservation, which in fact is a form of pollution tax control conservation is kilowatt hours that don't have to be generated by coal-fired or gas-fired plants or consume water over, through hydroelectric. So I would argue that there are tax incentives. The other thing is that I'm not aware by any calculations that Oregon has a deficit. As a matter of fact, it's prohibited by the Constitution. So by what math do you figure that Oregon has a deficit?
Senator Farrelly, members of the committee, I would clarify that I wasn't saying tax incentives. I was simply saying that citizens don't get subsidized to comply with the law. Both of those incentives that you were discussing are not laws that citizens are required to meet. It is simply that it is an incentive. This, as again, currently structured, the pollution control tax credit is subsidizing businesses to comply with laws. So that would be the distinction I would make there.
Kind of fuzzy. I guess I see the benefit here is that industry goes far beyond what's required by the law with these incentives. We can argue that point as the bill progresses. The other issue is deficit. How by what math do you calculate Oregon has a deficit?
Senator Farrelly and members of the committee, the budget projections are significantly lower than what we deficit perhaps is the wrong word, simply that we are in a position where we have less money to spend on important programs.
We have $1.1 billion more to spend in this biennium than we had in the last biennium. The fact that we love to spend money in this process and would be able to, each one of us in any committee would be able to identify a dozen different worthy causes that we'd love to spend money on. I mean, I can think of a couple of school issues I'd like to spend some money on. One anyway. But I don't think you can characterize us as having less revenue or even a deficit. I think you can say that we're going to have to make tough choices about what we choose to incent. But I guess I'll just ask the Vice Chair to, if he has any questions he'd like.
I do, Mr. Chair, if I can have a few. I was very impressed with your comments on the balance of economic incentives. Are you an expert in economic development?
No, Senator or Chair Farrelly, members of the committee. No, I'm not an expert per se in economic development. I have done some research on this particular issue and have had conversations and looked at this particular incentive.
Have you worked a lot with industry and worked on specific projects where it give you intimate knowledge of this?
Again, Chair Farrelly, Senator Beyer. We have worked with the Department of Environmental Quality to understand the impacts of this program and to understand where value has been added to an incentive program, and looking at this particular incentive program, where it has added value and makes sense for us to add resources to impact jobs in this state.
Were you aware that Oregon's economic incentives in total were the absolute worst of any of the 12 western states?
Sheriff Farioli, Senator Beyer, no. From my perspective, we were looking at simply at this particular incentive.
Were you aware that Oregon has lost about 20% of its manufacturing base in the last 10 years?
Sheriff Farioli, Senator Beyer, again, we're specifically looking at this particular incentive and whether or not this particular incentive makes sense to move forward with.
Do you think it would be better for Oregon to have as a policy to encourage businesses to move their facilities offshore rather than staying here and improve their environmental standards?
Senator Farioli, Senator Beyer, I think the bottom line on this is to ask the question to make sure that this particular tax incentive is truly an incentive that is bringing new facilities new businesses to the state. The burden of proof, I think, is on industry to show that that is actually happening and that this is adding value to the current job base in the state.
How about the potential of assisting existing businesses to stay in state rather than closing down and starting up new someplace else?
Senator Farioli, Senator Beyer, again, I think that the question is where this adds value, and if we are simply paying businesses to comply with the law, is that really the best utilization of those resources? If you had those resources to create economic incentives to bring jobs to rural Oregon, maybe that's a better use of those dollars.
What if you're an employee at a paper mill that's looking at the option of staying in the state and bringing its facility to new and meeting existing federal laws and exceeding versus closing it down and building it someplace else out of state?
Chair Farioli, Senator Beyer, again, the value of the pollution control tax credit, while it has a large impact overall in any given year, is relatively limited for any individual facility. So whether or not it is unlikely to be the final card that would make or break a decision from a facility for staying in Oregon.
When you say that, from having discussions with CEOs or CFOs from companies that have made those decisions?
Senator Farioli, Senator Beyer, there have been, I say that on the basis of there have been several discussions with the Department of Environmental Quality, with the Eugene Register Guard has done a series of articles looking at the impact of the additional tax credit throughout the state, and several of those also address that particular issue, and I'd be happy to get copies of those articles.
Well, I've seen those, and I don't think that was based on overall perspectives on their part, not necessarily on factual information. I've been involved in a few of these where I can tell you it made the difference on whether a production facility was kept online or not. In fact, in my community, the Weyerhaeuser plant, probably a marginal plant, probably would have not have made the additional investments without the credit.
Mr. Vice Chairman, I limited the discussion to 10 minutes, and let's. I think there may be some other folks that would like to add to the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was curious of the expert witness information that strikes me that it's opinion.
And well spoken, Mr. Vice Chair. Thank you very much for your testimony. I would like to ask if there's any other persons here present that would like to be invited to testify for a minute or less period of time. Seeing none. Mr. Vice Chair, thank you for your questions. I think there are some amendments that are being worked on. And this bill is the topic of some negotiations with the governor's office. We heard that testified to in the hearing that the vice chairman held the other day on this bill. I'm anxious to see that negotiation and those amendments move forward. I'm hopeful that the amendments will create a bill that the legislature will pass and the governor will sign. But we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 764. We'll open the work session on Senate Bill 229. Good morning.
Morning, Chair.
How are you today?
Very good, thank you.
Let's have just a brief recap of where we are on Senate Bill 229, or excuse me, Senate Bill, yeah, 229, and where the amendments stand at this point, and what our prospects for moving forward with this bill.
Dick Yates with the Legislative Revenue Office. The bill allows the existing 44 enterprise zones to petition the Economic and Community Development Department to have their zones designated as electronic commerce zones, in which case investments in internet and electronic commerce generally would qualify as investments eligible for the property tax exemption in those enterprise zones. And those investments would also, in this case, be eligible for a tax credit against any corporate or individual income tax liability equal to 25% of the investment. Now, what we had last time we dealt with actually was the amended version of the bill in the A and O's version. You also have in the materials before you an amendment. If you recall, I mentioned at the end of the last meeting that I was a little bit concerned from a tax theory standpoint that there was no limit on the amount of the credit, and you sort of authorized me to have an amendment directed which would put a limit on the amount of credit that an individual taxpayer could receive in any one tax year. I proceeded with that, and you have a dash two amendments which would limit it to $2 million. I don't have a good basis for arriving at $2 million. I guess I would consider, you know, that a topic of discussion.
It was a nice round number.
We have to do this every time we suspect one of your numbers.
Well, you know, that, I guess, Mr. Yates, shows that legislators should bring a bill forward with a blank in the midst of it have a invite speculation about a number. And I guess the...
Just proves, Mr. Chair, that economists are creative.
They can be. So, we have an amendment that limits the tax credits, and I think that... the intelligent thing for us to do if this bill isn't just to stall in this committee is to go ahead and insert that number as a discussion point, move it out of this committee to the floor. It actually does not. Where does it go from here, Mr. Yates? Does it go to, it would have to go to the floor. It has a written impact.
Yes.
And then let it go to the other end of the building where all of the tax credit bills are piling up like cordwood to be sorted through at the end of the legislative session. So it would be the chairman's desire to move the A2 amendments into the bill and move the bill to the floor with a due pass.
Are we in work session?
We are in work session.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Move the dash A2 amendments.
Dash A2 amendments are moved. Is there any question about the amendment? Any discussion? Any objections? If not, so ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Move the Senate Bill 229A and Gross as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
The motion is to move Senate Bill 229 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Are there any questions to the motion? Any objections to the motion? Not. So ordered. Senator Deckert will chair it. We're closed in work session. Colleagues, we're finished for the day. Oh, before we close out this morning, we discussed the issue when we were looking at Senator Corcoran's good bill on the allocation of Federal Forest Reserve funds outside the formula, or to deem them not to be local revenue. In your packets, or at least distributed on your desk today, is a letter to myself and Representative Shetterly that all of you, I think, received directly from the Oregon delegation. But just to remind you, it's signed by members of Congress, Darlene Hooley, Earl Bromenauer, David Blue, Peter DeFazio, Greg Walden, and Senators Gordon Smith and Ron Wyden. I think that's pretty much the whole Oregon delegation, if I get it right. And they basically indicate that those dollars have a particular purpose and that they were earmarked for that purpose. Also, as we promised the committee, we got you copies of Senate 1608 and H.R. 2389, which in fact speak directly to the purpose of those appropriations. And I think just to make those part of the public record, we've distributed those to the committee, and I urge your consideration of the implications of those two public laws and the letter from this delegation. Was no other work before the committee? Oh, Senator Minister.
Well, I just a question that I'd like to get an answer to at some point. The Federal Act talks about some of these monies being directed to counties for the purpose of public safety, law enforcement, education, and other public purposes.
Is that?
The question is whether or not these monies have ever been used for those purposes, and what's envisioned, I guess, in terms of supplying funds for those purposes.
Senator, in fact, when the road funds are distributed out of these dollars, they go to contract for law enforcement for road maintenance, for public safety, for signage, for police patrols and protection, and a whole host of other things out of the road funds. So they get there. They don't get there as directly as the school applications do, but they do get to the public.
Is it possible to get something from the counties that would indicate that that's...
I can do that. I could ask for a couple of the counties that I'm familiar with that would be happy to show you all the purpose to which those road funds are put.
Okay.
They'll probably excise their names from because there's quite a lot of a creative accounting that goes on in road funds in the rural counties, but I'd be happy to get that for you. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Just a comment. Reading this, and I've read this before, I'm looking down at their fourth paragraph. It strikes me that the delegation is very well intended, but we're not very understanding, as most of us in the building are not, of how the formula works. Your language is, it says that the language in the final version makes it clear that the new federal funds are intended to supplemental, not to supplant existing funds. This clarification was intended to assure that schools in historically timber-dependent communities do not continue to suffer, but instead enjoy an increased level of funding. If you look at our formula, existing funds would imply the money that's there already. We're going from, I think it's 4.8 to 5.2, so we're not decreasing existing funds. We're increasing funds, so there's no issue there. And supplemental to ensure that do not suffer and get increased funding, essentially that's what the formula does. It doesn't penalize them in any way.
Yeah, I think
so that I think the intent's clear, but it strikes me that this language to some degree indicates that they're not good understanding of how the formula works. And that's not a surprise. I mean, as I said, most legislators don't understand how it works either.
Yeah, and I guess I would just suggest that paragraph, the third paragraph, that these dollars were intended to supplement, not supplant, the existing funds means that right now the existing distributions from the timber dollars go into the formula as local revenue, and they displace general fund distributions. And I think the intent of Congress was that they not go into the local formula to displace those local revenues or displace the general fund, that they be added to the general fund for the local community. Senator Corcoran?
Well, yeah, and I think when you take into account the effect that the timber crisis had on communities, everything from property value to income, the two main sources of taxation that lead to the or have led to the support of these schools, there's a very easy argument to make that, you know, that the rest of the state could have enjoyed some of the wealth that the Tri-County area and, you know, the high-tech areas have had, and the benefit that that's brought to them that they just don't see in the Oak Ridges and the, you know, Cottage Groves. So.
And I guess the other thing, Senator Kirkman, is I don't think that Congress intended to pit rural and urban schools against each other. I don't think that was the intention at all. Senator Minnick.
Well, I just remind the committee, I think our Constitution is silent on those issues, but they're clear on the issue of equity. And I think to the extent that you provide some additional resources, whether it comes from the federal government or some other source, that is an exceptional resource that puts that out of kilter without some justification that's articulated in law. I think you've raised some potential constitutional questions.
Senator, I think you've just put your finger on the whole issue of inside or outside. You know, is there sufficient justification? Has it been articulated? Are these exceptional circumstances? We have a
And the Ministry of
The most important being is calling on you.
In my house, it's she who must be obeyed.
We do have things in common, don't we?
Now that he's leaving, Mr. Chair, I want to point out also that there's school districts that get all kinds of federal funds outside the formula. We never blink an eye at that.
Too much of an opportunity to be overlooked. I probably think that added this information to the record, that was the intention of the chair. You have it for your consideration. We will be looking at formula issues again.
I'm going down to revenue planning where that $2 million was.
Colleagues, we'll meet again tomorrow morning at 8:10. Thank you. We're in adjournment.